Hey, everybody, this episode is brought to you by my friends at ExpressVPN, expressvpn.com/Charlie. Secure your device, anonymize your online activity, protect your action online. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Help our show out by also helping yourself protect yourself. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, we talk about the Derek Chauvin verdict, Greg Gutfeld, Governor Doug Ducey. We talk about Hillsdale College. We talk breaking up a knife fight in Columbus, Ohio. Is America systemically racist? Boy, is this an action-packed episode. I want to hear from all of you. Apple suddenly disappeared our podcast. People can't access it. If you're listening to this and somehow, in some way, please email us your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com. On whether or not you can actually access us, I want to hear from you right now. It's very important. freedom@charliekirk.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Did you know that 80% of the grass-fed beef sold in the United States is imported from overseas? It's staggering. That's why I get my meat from GoodRanchers.com. Because their product is 100% American. When you buy your steak and chicken from Good Ranchers, not only are you getting amazing meat, but you're also supporting American farms. My friends at Good Ranchers have traveled the United States and met with actual farmers that raise the livestock to ensure the product they are sending to your table is the very best. All the product is individually wrapped with and it eliminates waste. GoodRanchers.com safely delivers American craft beef. Better than original chicken. Better than organic chicken right to your door. Buy one time or better yet, subscribe. Check out the Family Fest Bundle. If you subscribe, you will save 20% with each purchase. Subscribing brings the cost per meal down to just $2.38 per meal. That includes steak, chicken, and more. Stop trying to play the grocery store guessing game. Know where your meat comes from with GoodRanchers.com. Support American farmers. Go to GoodRanchers.com to get $20 off and free express shipping. 100% American beef and chicken. Chicken is always 100% all natural. No antibiotics ever, no hormones added ever, better than organic, individually wrapped, vacuum sealed, and ready to go. And don't forget, you always get free express shipping, safe and convenient way to shop. Go to goodranchers.com/Charlie, goodranchers.com/Charlie. So what is a religion? A religion, according to Wikipedia, which has never been wrong ever, is a religion is a social cultural system of designated behaviors and practices, morals, beliefs, worldviews, texts, sanctified places, prophecies, ethics, or organizations that relate humanity to supernatural, transcendental, and spiritual elements. So what is a religion? Again, it is a social cultural system, designated behaviors of practice, morals, beliefs. I am a religious person. I'm also a rational person. In fact, my love of reason actually informs my faith. Thomas Aquinas famously wrote about this, that the more that we dive into the natural world, the more we understand how there are laws that govern everything around us, the more we understand that that creation has a creator. Aristotle called this the unmoved mover. And I think those of us that are religious should be unafraid to talk about the importance of reason. And it's that mixture of reason and revelation that created Western civilization. What if I told you that there is a new religion in America? This religion is not one that might come to your mind immediately. But this religion has sanctified places. This religion has a specific worldview. It has a strange focus on human beings that have almost been sanctified. And this religion is wokeism. This religion has captivated the hearts and minds of our ruling class. This religion has taken over our schools. This religion has infiltrated our activist media. And we saw it on full display yesterday with the guilty verdict decision of Derek Chauvin. Now, I'm not on the jury. I did not watch every single moment of the trial. But do I think that certain testimony very well might have given the seed of reasonable doubt? Yes, I do. But I'm not going to say that the jury necessarily made the bad or wrong decision, because I'm actually an admirer of our justice system. I think the judge was right to speak out about Maxine Waters' comments. Do I think that this might result in a retrial? Possibly. But instead, I want to talk about the commentary surrounding the decision. Nancy Pelosi, I think, embodied this best. So before I play that clip, Nancy Pelosi was talking about George Floyd. And I want you to think about this deeply. As she says this, she says, "Thank you, George Floyd, for dying." Only a religious person would be thanking somebody for dying if they believed that sacrifice was a martyr for a certain purpose. I kid you not, this is what Nancy Pelosi said. Play tape.
"Well, again, thank you, George Floyd, for sacrificing your life for justice, for being there to call out to your mom. How heartbreaking was that? Call out for your mom. I can't breathe. But because of you, and because of thousands, millions of people around the world who came out for justice, your name will always be synonymous."
So she said that he sacrificed himself, which is a very bizarre way to put it, as if he wanted to die. That is basically the definition of sacrifice, that it's the willing or obedient gesture to inhibit yourself, your freedom, your liberty, your life for a different purpose. Now, maybe Nancy Pelosi misspoke, but this was something that was repeated by many different people, like George Floyd's girlfriend thanked him for dying, saying that he gave his life. Cut 62.
"I loved him with all my heart, and I'd do anything to have him standing next to me again today. But I know he gave his life so this could happen. And I know that he gave his life so that other people's cases can get reopened. We can re-examine the cases that were closed. We can get justice for people that deserve."
And so if you're saying that he gave his life, we're glad that he did this. That's what Nancy Pelosi said. Thank you. She's thanking him. That's a completely different narrative than something happening to him. It's either he's a victim or he did this willingly. Now, you might just think I'm arguing semantics here, but words really matter when it comes to how we're portraying these events. And BLM Incorporated reacted as we would have thought. They're not satisfied. Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison said, "This is not justice. Justice is not just one incident, but justice would be a transformational upheaval of the American system." You see, they call this just accountability. Their definition of justice is not the traditional Western or biblical view of justice, which is getting people what they deserve, giving them a process of the presumption of innocence. No, Keith Ellison's definition of justice is taking away property from people, taking away freedom from people, and redesigning society in his image. Cut 67.
"That long, hard, painstaking work has culminated today. I would not call today's verdict justice, however, because justice implies true restoration. But it is accountability, which is the first step towards justice. And now the cause of justice is in your hands. And when I say your hands, I mean the hands of the people of the United States."
So they're intentionally redefining the word justice to try to justify dramatic and abrupt changes to our entire country. And so this entire moment in America was focused on because it fit a very specific political agenda. I think there was a massive overemphasis on this trial. I think we know too much about it. I mean, most Americans know far too much about a very complicated police stop that happened in Minneapolis. And Joe Biden himself said that the verdict is not enough, and we're loading up that tape, where he said the verdict is not enough. This is just the start of restorative justice, even though none of the numbers, none of the data, none of the facts reflect this idea that blacks are in any way disproportionately being targeted because of the color of their skin, or that there is any widespread threat against the black community coming from policing. In fact, it's the exact opposite, that blacks are the beneficiaries of policing in our country. The facts bear that out strongly. And so the activists are now grappling for their next apparent crisis to keep themselves in front of cameras, to keep themselves in headlines. BLM Incorporated became a multi-billion dollar movement almost overnight because of George Floyd. And the justice system played itself out. And I think that a mistrial very well might be in the cards. And Alan Dershowitz is the one that is pushing that forward, largely because of Maxine Waters and the potential jury intimidation that happened. But when BLM Incorporated says, quote, "We are never going to be satisfied," she asks you the question, what do they actually want? Look, by now you've all heard me talk about MyPillow and how Mike has done it again by introducing his My Slippers. Mike Lindell, he's got a lot of ambition. He's a patriot. He loves his country. A lot of people like Mike Lindell. In fact, I get emails from people. They say, "Charlie, how can I help you? How can I help Mike Lindell? How can I help the country?" Well, if you go to MyPillow.com and buy anything with the promo code Kirk, it helps both of us. That's right. Maybe you want to go buy the MyPillow slippers. They're beautiful slippers. Maybe you want to buy the MyPillow. MyPillow slippers are so comfortable that you want to get some for the whole family. So go to MyPillow.com and click on the radio listener square and use promo code Kirk. You'll also get deep discounts on MyPillow products, including the Giza Dream bed sheets, the MyPillow mattress toppers, and MyPillow towel sets. Or call 800-875-0425 and use promo code Kirk. For whatever reason, Apple has us no longer on the Apple podcast charts. I think it's just a glitch. I'm going to hope that's the case. But if a grassroots group of people went and subscribed to our podcast on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify, that could definitely help. We're getting some emails here, freedom@charliekirk.com. Some about this hyper-corporatization of America. Just got a couple emails on that because I've been commenting a lot on that. And we've been posting some podcasts on that. And this is something that, quite honestly, Republicans need a lead on. I spoke here in Dallas at the RNC meetings. I spoke to a really great group of grassroots conservatives, and Ronna McDaniel's doing a great job running the RNC. But my message to these grassroots conservatives was three things. And then we'll get more into the Derek Chauvin thing because I think it's really important. My message to these grassroots conservatives was, number one, that the RNC and Republicans must lead on election reform. To reform our elections. If we do not fix our elections, we are never going to have a constitutional system again. Number two, Republicans and the RNC should lead on breaking up big tech. That's right, breaking them up. Trust busting 2.0. Break up Google, break up Twitter, break up Facebook. And one of the arguments people make, and they didn't make this today, but I just read an op-ed piece I'm still trying to process because I don't want to say who wrote it, because I just kind of skimmed it in between breaks. But one of the arguments, they say, well, Charlie, if we break up these companies, then China's going to dominate these in the tech space. I say, wait, hold on a second. What's the difference between Google and China? Google panders to China. Google is a Chinese subsidiary as it is. This idea that Google and Facebook are American companies is a joke. They might have some employees in Menlo Park. They're anti-American companies. And you're trying to tell me that if we break up these companies, we're not going to have more entrepreneurs that actually love their country, have an opportunity to be able to take risks in the marketplace and start new businesses? Google, Amazon, and Facebook hate America. They've said that. They do not share our values. They believe America is a temporary colony to make as much money as possible. And then if needed, they're going to move to Singapore. I believe America's our home. I love this country. My family has fought in every major war in American history. I have a connection to the sacrifice that they made from my grandfather in World War II, to one of my ancestors in the Civil War, to being a son of the American Revolution. The Kirks came here in 1620, I'm not all of a sudden going to turn back on the sacrifices of the people that came before me and say, you know what? This constitutional republic that was given to us to protect natural rights granted to us from God, not by government, it's been nice. I'm going to try and make as much money as I can and be indifferent about the moral and societal and cultural decline, and then I'm going to go move to Wuhan or Singapore. That's not the program I'm signing up for. I'm here to stay. I want to build a family here. This is our home. So anyway, breaking up those tech companies is number two that I said to the RNC. And number three, the RNC members. And number three was that corporations are not your friend. We had a really good, robust conversation with some of the members because some of them pushed back. One of the members, a wonderful woman, won't say her name on air. I've known her for a while and she's terrific. But she said, Charlie, I'm a capitalist. Therefore, I love these corporations. And we had a really kind of calm dialogue about it. And I said, first of all, these corporations are not capitalistic. They're monopolistic focused. They want domination over human behavior and of our country. Number two, they have no interest in actually preserving or protecting the welfare of our nation. It's all about instant gratification and profit maximization. I'm not discounting that some of these companies have done nothing but bad things. The third thing that I think that's really interesting, though, is why do we love markets? We love markets because they serve people. And so at its optimal form, we should love the entrepreneur that starts something new, that takes a risk in the marketplace, improves our lives, and then has some sort of obligation to go back and give back to the country they live in. These corporations from Delta to Coca-Cola to Amazon to Major League Baseball, they've exhibited none of that obligation. In fact, it's the opposite. They want to wage economic warfare on their fellow countrymen. They want to split and divide citizens and make them suffer because they disagree with their political views. And so those are the three things I mentioned. We also had a really interesting conversation on immigration, which I can get into. Is that number one, we must fix our elections in our country. The voters are demanding it. It is the number one issue of the American grassroots, and it should be, is to fix the way we do elections. Number two, breaking and smashing big tech up. And they are not American companies. They might be domiciled here in America. They might as well be owned by the Chinese Communist Party. And then number three, corporations are not your friend.
With the ever-increasing numbers of makes, Fiat, Kia, and models, it is now impossible to stock all the parts you need on a traditional chain storefront. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the counterman orders the parts on his computer, choosing the only brand his warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. Chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. Rockauto.com's prices are the same for everybody and are reliably low. Rockauto.com always offers the lowest prices possible rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear like airlines do. RockAuto.com is for everybody and does not require membership or account login. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brand, specifications, and prices you prefer. Go to RockAuto.com right now to see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Charlie Kirk in there, how'd you hear about us section. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com.
I want to get to what happened in Ohio. It seems to be going viral. There's a lot of confusion around that with this story of Makia Bryant. I have a feeling you're going to be hearing that name quite a lot in the coming days, where allegedly Makia Bryant was fighting with one girl and Bryant was trying to stab another girl. A police officer tells her to stop and she doesn't. One of the girls goes on the ground and then charges another girl, pinning her up against a car, trying to stab her with a knife. The officer yells her to get down and then fires what it sounds like four shots. So there were three people, there was a three-person knife fight where only one was armed with a knife and she was clearly looking to cause potentially lethal harm to these girls. and the officer has a responsibility to use force to protect either himself or the third party, and he used it to protect the black girls that were being stabbed by Makia Bryant. So unless I'm missing something dramatic here, this police officer saved young black girls' lives. So we have a couple cuts on this. Let's go to cut 56 and then cut 57 around this. Cut 56 is some of the footage. I have to give a warning that it might be graphic because I don't want the social media companies to do whatever they do. Play tape. Sounds like chaos because it is chaos. And so, as simply as I can put it, it's a complete mess of these black girls, one that is trying to stab the other, and this police officer intervened, actually preventing her from possibly killing and stabbing another person. Again, these are split-second decisions. So the BLM Incorporated is already mobilizing, I think this is Columbus, Ohio, to try and represent this as a police officer who intentionally killed the 16-year-old girl just because she was black. Defund and abolish police, refund our communities. Whoa, Bree Newsom, BLM Incorporated, says, quote, teenagers have been having fights, including fights involving knives, for eons. We do not need police to address these situations by showing up to the scene and using a weapon against one of the teenagers. Y'all need help. I mean that sincerely. Huh. Everyone should be frightened that the ruling white elite have done such a thoroughly successful job of not only disconnecting us from the means of basic self-sufficiency, but also convincing us we need armed white officers to manage our children and communities. Frightening. Frightening level of oppression conditioning. Absolutely frightening. So basically, Bree Newsom is making an argument that she wants to have no police and govern yourselves in the black community. That actually might be where this is heading. This is probably heading to a place where blacks are going to say, we do not want police officers and we are going to enforce our own laws. Now, absent a government authority actually doing that, you're going to have a gangbanger running the streets, like what happens in Chicago. You basically have police-free zones in Chicago. For all my friends listening on AM 560 The Answer, there are areas where the police do not regularly patrol. It's run by the gangs. They will come to go clean up the dead. They'll come to go mop up the blood, but they are not regularly patrolled. They're not. And there's almost a not-so-secret deal that the police don't want to get shot, so they say, you guys are in charge of yourselves. There are basically no-go zones. Now, what neighborhoods am I talking about? I'm talking about Little Village. I'm talking about Dunning. I'm talking about Morgan Park. I'm talking about West Pullman. I'm talking about Washington Heights. For those of you in Chicago, you know exactly what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the Lower West Side. Now, there are parts where the cops are very visible and they police quite often. Of course, I'm talking about the Streeterville area or Lincoln Park area or the Lakeview area. But this idea of, you know what, we're not going to have police in these black areas. How's that working out for Chicago? We know that a person in 2020, was shot every 2 hours and 6 minutes, and a person was murdered every 11 hours and 6 minutes. There was somebody shot and killed. There were 719 people shot and killed in Chicago in 2020, and 3,455 people shot and wounded, with 4,174 people total shot and 792 homicides in Chicago. Almost all of that is black-on-black crime. The deadliest neighborhoods, Austin, Englewood, Garfield Park, North Lawndale, Humboldt Park, Auburn, Gresham, Grand Crossing, South Shore, Chatham, Roseland, Little Village, South Chicago, Chicago Lawn, Near West Side, West Pullman. Those are almost all black communities. They're all black communities. One of those is a Hispanic Latino community. One of them. That, as I know, as I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago, willing to be corrected if I might be off on some of the demographic changes in Chicago. But this idea that removal of all police is all of a sudden going to be this introduction of peace is ridiculous. Remember Chaz? Do you remember the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone in Seattle, where I believe the body count was two people after a couple days, including a young black man, and we still do not know who who killed that young black man? By the way, the rationale that BLM Incorporated is trying to push forward for whatever happened in Ohio, which we just looked at, but I'm sure more information is going to come out, is that knife fights are a thing that we should allow happen. That's a bizarre line of reasoning, that knife fights are okay, that teenagers have been having knife fights for quite some time. Well, a knife is a lethal weapon. And the police officer actually intervened and saved lives in this situation. Over its 24-day history at the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone, it saw two gun homicides and four additional shooting victims. In the end, the homicide rate in Chaz turned out to be 1,216 per 100,000 people, nearly 50 times greater than that of Chicago's. And so Columbus is about to become the new Minneapolis. These Midwestern cities can only take so much of this nonstop blitzkrieg from BLM Incorporated and Al Sharpton and Bree Newsom and Robin DiAngelo and Ta-Nehisi Coates. So let's close the loop on the Derek Chauvin trial. Greg Gutfeld said something that was very controversial. I'm actually going to defend him a little bit because I think he didn't say it very artfully. I don't agree with what he said, but I'm going to say what he was trying to say, because Greg's a friend of mine, and I think it's been unfair the way people have piled on him, and he's actually done a great job for our country. Let's play Cut 60.
And now I'm going to just get really selfish. I'm glad that he was found guilty on all charges.
Yeah.
Even if he might not be guilty of all charges.
Oh, my God. Oh.
I am glad that he is guilty of all charges, because I want a verdict that keeps this country from going up in flames.
Oh, my goodness.
No.
What do you mean?
Look, Greg, listen.
What do you mean? No, I'm at least being honest. My neighborhood was looted.
Greg,
I don't ever want to go through that again.
So here's what Greg's saying. He's not artful. No one should be glad that someone gets a sentence if you do not believe that sentence is warranted. What Greg is basically, the argument that Greg was making, and I don't think he meant to make it this way. I'm actually going to say what I think Greg was trying to say. This clip has gone totally viral, by the way. What I think that, what it sounded like Greg was saying is, feed Chauvin to the wolves as long as it keeps my streets safe. That's not the right argument. That's what he said. That's not what he meant to say. What he meant to say is this, is that the mob has so much power that if this verdict was not reached, a greater evil would have been executed on America. That's what Greg was saying. And I think that Greg was trying to be snarky and witty in a moment that it really wasn't there that much space for that. And it just, the whole segment blew up from there. But I'm going to defend what Greg's sentiment was. I don't agree with it, because I actually think you shouldn't all of a sudden say, hey, even I don't think he's guilty, just put him away because I don't want my street to be burned. But Greg's sentiment was likely felt by one of the jurors. And Greg's sentiment, by the way, is felt by a lot of Americans. And Greg was expressing on cable television the most important thing. Greg was expressing on cable television something that was missed by all the other commentators and all the Twitter people that have been writing this up. You know what they missed? That very few people are willing to admit that these riots have a very real effect on how we analyze, process, and make decisions in our country. And Greg said the secret part out loud. And I don't agree with him. I think that's wrong, but I also think he's in some way of a defense, because I think there was a more artful way to say it. If Greg would have just said this, listen, if this would have been a not guilty verdict, the streets would have burned, and I don't want to see the streets burned. If he would have said that, no one would have cared. Instead, Greg said what a lot of people, millions of people in the minority communities of our country were thinking, please, I hope he's guilty because my convenience store is going to get burned down. Instead, we should take a pause and say, hold on a second. Why would your convenience store get burned down? How is that a healthy or normal thing? That we have to mobilize the National Guard and militarize our streets because all of a sudden there's going to be a verdict that you don't like from a jury of your peers? And then we're supposed to believe that this trial, that the jury wasn't influenced by it? Again, maybe they were, maybe they weren't. Maybe they actually did go home and not look at their phone and not listen to the radio and not look at their social media feed and not look at their TV. And maybe they just went home and read books for the last 2 weeks. Maybe that happened. Or maybe there was a not so subtle influence of the jury that was living in Minneapolis, looking at the city that they love, looking at the businesses they own, looking at the relatives in the community around them and saying, you know what? I'm not going to be outed or doxed or be part of something like this. And by the way, I very well might have come to the same decision that the jury might have come to. Again, I tend to yield with the side of the jury on these things. Very rarely do I make public statements that the jury is wrong. And I actually think our system of justice should work generally. Do I think it's fair to say that a sitting congresswoman can threaten and hold an entire civilization hostage by that? Absolutely not. And what Greg did is prove the point that we've been making. In fact, Greg's commentary right there could be used in an appeal. I don't know if his specific words, but his sentiment can be used in an appeal by Chauvin saying, hey, people wanted me to be guilty because they didn't want their civilization to burn down. That's what Greg was saying. And the fact that that sentiment exists is true. And it's so unhealthy and it's wrong. It's wrong that we are cheering for someone to get locked away because we don't want our civilization to unravel. A lot of people are happy today that there is peace in the streets. But why is there peace in the streets? Is there peace in the streets because we have self-control of our impulses and our desires? Or is there peace in the streets because the mob got what they wanted? For now. But they'll just move on to the next event. And that's not justice. That's chaos. Now, there actually might be a retrial for Derek Chauvin. Let's go to Cut 72. Alan Dershowitz agrees with me that the unstated, that's not the right way to say it, the obvious, that's the best way, the obvious thing in front of us all in regards to this trial was that there was a sword of Damocles above all of our heads. I'm going to tell you what the sword of Damocles is. Play tape.
Their threats and intimidation and hanging the sword of Damocles over the jury and basically saying if you don't convict on the murder charge and all the charges, the cities will burn, the country will be destroyed, seeped into the jury room because the judge made a terrible mistake by not sequestering the jury. So the judge himself said this case may be reversed on appeal. And I think it might be reversed on appeal. I think it should be reversed on appeal.
Next, 173, I think we have, on Alan Dershowitz, where he believes it should be reversed on appeal. Play tape.
I can criticize Waters. I can criticize Sharpton. These folks took what they did right out of the playbook of the Deep South in the 1920s, when prominent public officials would whoop up the crowds in front of the courthouse demanding conviction of black people and acquittal of white people. And the Supreme Court and other courts reversed convictions based on that because jurors should not be intimidated or influenced by what goes on outside the courtroom.
So the sword of Damocles, as Alan Dershowitz mentioned, is this phrase you're going to hear more and more, but it's a threat. And it comes from Roman times and the great Cicero, who was killed, by the way. He was killed due to a conspiracy. I believe it was Brutus and Mark Antony who conspired against Cicero in the second triumvirate. Now you're really testing my Roman history here. Cicero was awesome. He was a one-year Roman consul. He actually argued for the American system of government before anyone else. Cicero famously said, the more laws, the less justice. He was a lawyer, a best-selling author, and he ridiculed his opponents, which is why they ended up killing him. But anyway, the sword of Damocles is this threat. It's a story, it's a legend in Greek and Roman times of this threat that if you do something wrong, this will hang above you, and the sword shall hang above the throne. And so everyone will always watch in fear and anxiety that the sword might be used against you. And the sword is always hanging above you when you come and you visit the king. And so the story's more intimate than that. It's not more intimate. It's more detailed than that. But the point is that this is always hanging over us. This threat that, hey, we're going to deploy the mob against you. We're going to mobilize the swarm. The horde of unhappy activists might be coming to a restaurant near you, might be coming to your church. And so, of course, when Greg Gutfeld, again, I believe not artfully, but he says a sentiment that so many Americans are feeling, not one I actually believe, by the way, that, hey,
Throw Chauvin away, and our streets will be safe. So whether you really realize it or not, we're living in a hostage situation. We are living in a situation where BLM Incorporated has taken decent and civil society and safe streets and our American way of life hostage. If they do not get specifically what they demand, they will riot, loot, and burn with no consequences, by the way. As just today, in the last couple of days, the Portland DA and the local Portland government, they dropped charges from all of the rioters from last summer. Just let go. So there's no price to widespread looting. There's only a reward. So if you know basic economics, you know that when you subsidize something, you get more of it. But there's an incentive structure. Incentives are one of the things that drive economic behavior. In economics, it's a war against scarcity. That's what economics is. There's an incentive to riot. It's very little cost. You're probably not going to get caught. And if you do, you're not going to get charged. And if you get charged, you get your riot, your bail paid for, and you get a good social media post out of it that you're fighting the system of oppression. But the advantage, you get to feel like a hero, and you might get what you want. The new way of achieving a political goal in America is not canvassing and running for office, it's burning American streets to the ground. And whether you realize it or not, you're being held hostage by that threat. Did you know that over 80% of the population is deficient in magnesium, and magnesium is the number one mineral to fight stress, fatigue, and sleep issues? My work schedule has been rather hectic lately, and I'm noticing it's starting to wear me down, even when I'm getting all my workouts in. In fact, I still feel like I'm stressed. That's why I'm excited to share with you more about a magnesium product I discovered. Magnesium powers over 600 critical reactors in our bodies, but don't just grab any magnesium pill. The one I recommend is Magnesium Breakthrough because it combines all 7 essential forms of magnesium into one convenient supplement. Most magnesium supplements fail because they are synthetic and they're not full spectrum. When you get all 7 critical forms of magnesium, pretty much every function in your body gets upgraded. With one more simple action, you reverse your magnesium deficiency, fight fatigue, feel more at ease, feel less anxious. This is by far the most complete magnesium product ever created, and I highly recommend it. Today, you can get 10% off at magbreakthrough.com/Kirk. Coupon code 10. That's magbreakthrough, promo code Kirk. magbreakthrough.com/Kirk. Enter code Kirk10. That's magbreakthrough.com/Kirk. Enter code Kirk10. Feel relaxed. magbreakthrough.com/Kirk. We just got a couple people saying, Charlie, I'm trying to find your podcast on a certain topic. So every phone has a podcast app. And yes, the background of my phone is Winston Churchill. Winston Churchill on a cloudy day, probably 36 degrees. And it says the background of my phone is, people ask me all the time, Charlie, what's the background of your phone? It looks kind of weird. Winston Churchill says, what is the use of living if it is not to strive for noble causes and make this muddled world a better place for those who will live in it after we have gone? Winston Churchill was the greatest man of the 20th century. You know, I was just speaking in North Dakota the other day, and I told this, the last story I told, on a stack of Bibles, I could have said I said this correctly, but I don't think I did because 3 or 4 people came up to me. And I told this whole story about how Winston Churchill, right when Pearl Harbor was bombed, he turned to his war cabinet and he said, we have now won the war. Now that the Americans have woken up. I told the whole story, but I never said Winston Churchill's name. I just said the greatest man to live in the 20th century. So some people are coming up like, did you mean FDR? I'm like, of course I didn't mean FDR. So anyway, everyone has a phone. And in a phone, you have a podcast app. Apple Podcast preloads that on your Apple device. And if you hit podcast, type in Charlie Kirk Show, subscribe. It helps us a lot. We have been suspiciously removed from the Apple Podcast charts. We believe, hopefully, it's just a glitch. But let's send them a message and have everyone subscribe at home. You guys can email us in real time, freedom@charliekirk.com. I love hearing from you as we are broadcasting coast to coast. The Charlie Kirk Show from Spokane to Riverside to Hawaii to New York, we are honored to always be with you. Okay, I want to get into a couple things here. I didn't play this tape before. Okay, let's go to this one. Cut 69, some BLM supporter says, yes, we can defund the police, and maybe one day we'll abolish the police, but we're not going to do anything until we have control over them. Cut 69.
We can defund the police. And maybe one day we will abolish the police, but we ain't going to do shit unless we have control over them. That is the number one thing right now. We're not going to let these pigs in these buildings have any more control over our lives today. That shit ends today.
And so Cut 70 is a BLM supporter saying, we go beyond voting and we need to come out every single day. Cut 70.
We need to go way beyond voting at this point.
That's right.
We need to be coming out here every single day if that's what it takes until we get justice for the people that they murdered a week ago they've already forgotten about. The only reason, once again, that we got this conviction is because we showed up. And if we don't keep showing up, and if we don't change laws, and we don't attack this system from every single angle we can, we will be here again.
So these people are such intellectual lightweights. It's hard to believe that they're in charge of our country, but they kind of are. And I want to just hone in on one thing. I can't tell if that's a man or a woman or non-binary. I'm not going to assume a gender, whatever that activist is or whomever that person is. Not sure. Sounded like a woman. I'm sure that the ACLU is going to come out with some sort of thing saying that Charlie Kirk is trying to assume people's... Sounds like a woman, probably a woman, but who knows? And so, not very clear. But this person says, we only got justice because we showed up. Huh. Isn't that the whole point that we're trying to make, that this decision very well might have been impacted by the threats that you've been levying, such as, we have to go beyond voting. We have to burn the entire system to the ground. She didn't say that. She said we have to tear the whole system to the ground or work within it. I'm paraphrasing the essence of it. Heather McDonald on Tucker Carlson, who is just a guest on our podcast, says we do not have a hot riot tonight, but we know what a riot is, and therefore we know the punishment if we don't give the horde what they want. Cut 63.
The demoralization is so huge. We don't have hot riots tonight, Tucker, but we've been having a slow riot for the last year. We're going to have a slow riot for the next 4 years. Biden today said, enough of these senseless killings. Was he referring to the dozens of blacks who were gunned down fatally every day in drive-by shootings? Was he referring to 7-year-old Jaslyn Adams, who was shot fatally 6 times at a McDonald's in Chicago over the weekend? Of course not. He was referring to a phantom. That phantom is the idea of systemic police bias.
And now the Aristotle of our time, AOC, had a hot take saying, this is not justice. This is just the beginning. You see, you have to understand, for those of us that do this every single day, this is very obvious to us, but these people want a fundamentally different America. This is not a policy debate. This is a question of whether or not America is going to be radically transformed. Cut 54.
So no, this verdict is not justice. Frankly, I don't even think we call it full accountability, because there are multiple officers that were there. It wasn't just Derek Chauvin. And I also don't want this moment to be framed as this system working, because it's not working.
Now, the most depressing part of that is that mountain of gibberish that she just spouted for 30 seconds. Couldn't really make sense of it. There were just like this line of comments one after the other of people being like, preach, OMFG, you're amazing, you go girl. I can't really make sense of anything she just said, except for the fact that she is displeased. Because if you're thankful, if you're happy, that does not play well for a revolution. There has never been a thankful people that have staged a revolution. Ever. Thankful people tend not to want to destroy everything around them. People that are thankful for what they've been given or what they've worked for, or the people around them or the grace of God, tend to not want to go burn everything down. It's a general rule of thumb, something that should be a rather healthy predictor of what's going to happen next. Now, you need to rail against the system. And so if she was to say, you know what, we won this one, let's go home, guys, this is great, kind of take the wind out of the sails of this alleged revolutionary moment. And Joe Biden is saying it too. is Joe Biden needs the hostage situation of America to continue. It's helpful to the Democrats. It can help them in public policy conversation, help them in debates. And let me tell you where this is headed. This is headed to a place where soon the activists will say, if you do not expand the court, we are going to riot. If you do not add D.C. as a state, we are going to riot. Cut 71. Joe Biden says this verdict's not enough. Cut 71.
Systemic racism is a stain on our nation's soul. The knee on the neck of justice for black Americans. Today's verdict is a step forward, but it's not enough. We can't stop here. In order to deliver real change and reform, we can and we must do more to reduce the likelihood that tragedies like this will ever happen and occur again.
Systemic racism, those are two words that no one is ever able to define with any sort of precision at all, with no detail. But they sound true. So this idea of systemic racism is that because of any disparities that we see in the black community, racism and the system of racism is to blame. The best book that debunks this is Discrimination and Disparities by a black economist, Thomas Sowell. And his general thesis is this. You're going to have differences in life. You're especially going to have differences based on cultural and linguistic prerequisites. Thomas Sowell argues that there are thousands of prerequisites that could possibly determine outputs, and with it, a disparity. But blaming discrimination or racism on that output as the sole and leading and largely contributing factor is not just wrong, it's dangerous. In fact, it only satisfies a political agenda, one where people want to keep on getting elected and staying in power. It is very unhelpful to actually try to solve problems of which they're not trying to do. So Thomas Sowell's, again, his argument is things are different in the white community and the black community. Why? Is it time to stop renting and buy your first home? Owning your home is an investment in your future, and with today's low rates, now is the time to do it. Often with mortgage payment, it's the same as rent, so why pay for someone else's mortgage payment? Going through the mortgage process for the first time means you're going to have lots of questions. You need someone you can trust. I recommend Andrew and Todd at andrewandtodd.com. They are with Sierra Pacific Mortgage. These guys are honest, trustworthy professionals who can answer all of your questions and walk you through the entire process. They help first-time homebuyers and put the actual plan together. And because Andrew and Todd are bankers, not brokers, Andrew and Todd and their team personally work with you from the start to finish. You always have someone in your corner. I've heard amazing things about Andrew and Todd, so take the first step towards home ownership. You know you want to. Just go online and answer a few questions at andrewandtodd.com. That's andrewandtodd.com. If you guys are a mortgage, maybe you're looking to buy a home, do it while rates are low. Go to andrewandtodd.com, andrewandtodd.com. We got an email here from Eva. I think you may have been kicked off podcast on Apple Podcasts because when I go to your podcast page, it just says connecting. I checked out the podcast to listen to on Apple and their pages are fine. We'll see what happens. But if you guys in record numbers try and do that, and if you can, let us know. Email us your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com if you're able to subscribe. If not, on Spotify. Our podcast is doing record numbers. We're growing very quickly. It's been awesome. And then we do one episode asking the question, did Derek Chauvin get a fair trial? And like that, we just disappear. Maybe it's just a technical glitch. DailyWire.com. Tennessee Tech professors post flyers calling colleague Turning Point USA advisor racist. Two Tennessee Tech University professors are under investigation for posting flyers that designated their colleagues as racist. Andrew Smith, an associate professor of English, and Julia Gruber, an associate professor of German, that's a great name, Gruber, German, of course she teaches German, admitted to posting insulting flyers around the school of associate nursing professor and Turning Point USA advisor Andrew Donadio. The flyers condemn the conservative activist group and its professor watch list, which ranks how biased progressive professors are. The flyer reads, "This racist professor thought it'd be a great idea to help start a Tennessee Tech chapter for this national hate group, where racist students can unite to harass, threaten, intimidate, or terrorize persons of color, feminists, liberals, and the like, especially their teachers. Their organization created a national professor watch list to harass and intimidate professor educators, including many women, African-Americans, and Muslim professors. In the middle of the flyer was a picture of Donadio. The photo was captioned, "Professor Donadio and Turning Point USA, you are on our list. Your hate and hypocrisy are not welcome at Tennessee Tech. No unity with racist hate speech is not free speech." Huh. So we're being lectured by Julia Gruber, the German professor, about she's making lists of people. Huh. Maybe the German professor should know a little bit about the danger of creating lists and targeting Professor Donadio on the campus. Interesting. Saying literally targeting him. Now, people say the professor watch list is something that it isn't. It's literally a publicly available list of things that people have said that are third party verified. You can check it out at professorwatchlist.org. Smith and Gruber believe that hate speech is not protected by the First Amendment, though they are arguing that their criticism and name calling of professor is protected by the First Amendment. Interesting. You guys could check out Professor Watchlist for yourself. It's a very popular project. Parents, teachers, alumni, donors have a right to know the anti-American nonsense and garbage that your children are learning. It really bothers them because we're finally unmasking these radical professors in our universities. For example, Jennifer Beagle from the New School, she tweeted out, "If you support the March for Life but aren't a woman, please sit down and shut the F up. If you support March for Life but don't support gun control, please sit down and shut up." She tweeted against law enforcement many times. And that's just one of many examples that you can find on professorwatchlist.org. What you have here is professors targeting other professors, calling him a racist and calling him a Nazi because he associates with Turning Point USA. No sense of irony at all whatsoever. Gruba says, "I am relieved to learn that Mr. Donadio has issues with being called a racist. This tells me that he doesn't identify one. I would therefore like to extend an invitation to help him help us in our anti-racist activities in our campus and in our community." Extraordinary. These are the people that are teaching our children. These are professors. These are supposed to be people that do deep thinking and exploring truth and trying to build character and wisdom in the next generation. Instead, they are spewing venom and mobilizing other professors against one professor at Tennessee Tech University that wants to help get a Turning Point USA chapter started. Just a little bit of a conservative voice on campus, but no, that's not allowed. In the eyes of the activist professors that make an extraordinary amount of money, it's not okay to have one conservative thought, not one iota of a center-right perspective. Instead, they want college campuses to be permanent islands of totalitarianism, islands of Stalinism. The left has never believed in freedom of speech, discourse, or dialogue. They are now using their power, both political and cultural power, to create us into a one-party state. They just want us to be under the party, where up is down and left is right and war is peace, as George Orwell used to say. It turns out that Apple is playing games with us. People cannot access our podcast feed, which is really bizarre and quite honestly inexplicable. This is a very well listened to podcast, and for whatever reason, almost every other podcast out there, that conservative podcast seems to be out there in the charts. Ours is mysteriously missing from the landscape. It could be because we decided to do an episode on George Floyd and Derek Chauvin, or maybe it could be a technical glitch. I think we all know what's really happening in our country. So we'll keep you updated on that. Rather critical. Senator Sherrod Brown has commented on the teenager knife wielder, attempted murderer, who was killed in the Columbus police shooting, saying she should be alive right now. She was trying to kill somebody with a knife, in that sort of context is important. And then the race hustler himself, Crump, what's his name? He's the worst. Crump, Ben Crump. He pops up everywhere. Ben Crump is ubiquitous. This guy, I mean, you turn over a rock, Ben Crump is, I've never seen a guy on television so much. He was like, he's like Al Sharpton, race hustler, 1980s, early 90s. And many of you don't know this. I think her name was Tawina Brawley. Is that her name? Yeah, Tawana Brawley. Yeah, I meant no offense by her mispronouncing her name. Just from totally made up, though, by the way. A completely fictitious hate crime that Al Sharpton pushed on the American people. Al Sharpton decided to do this massive revamp by losing all this weight, as if we'll forget that he was exploiting our country. Ben Crump came out and he says, as we breathed a collective sigh of relief today, a community in Columbus felt the sting of another police shooting who killed an unarmed 15-year-old black girl. Not true. Now, mind you, they tried this race hustle. In fact, Eric Kaufman, who we had in our podcast, which I would tell you to go subscribe to our podcast if Apple all of a sudden didn't disappear our podcast. Eric Kaufman has this really nice chart. I guess you could call it beautiful. It's a nice chart, really informative, I should say. And it has all the peaks and valleys of when Americans have cared about racism. And the time they cared about racism at the highest was the Rodney King riots and also right near the Al Sharpton race hustling hoax. Ben Crump is right on the precipice of this. Ben Crump seems to just, he is the new Al Sharpton. Everything is racist. We need dramatic action. We're going to keep on covering that story. But I want to get to Arizona. The governor of Arizona is Doug Ducey. I know Doug Ducey. I have nothing against him personally. But he has some explaining to do. I'm puzzled by this. So I spend a lot of my time here in Arizona. I care about Arizona. I'm seeing Arizona turn quickly into a California suburb. Arizona is, they now legalized weed in Arizona, which is a terrible idea. In fact, 420 was recently, I guess it was yesterday. I'm happy to walk through why I'm against the legalization of marijuana. There's a really interesting book by Alex Berenson that I think is super important. Anyway, Arizona legalized weed. Two Democrat senators voted for Joe Biden, just raised taxes. And Arizona is pushing some of the most graphic sex education curriculum at the local level, becoming California 2.0. So the Arizona House of Representatives and the Arizona Senate passed Senate Bill 1456, which is a pretty vanilla bill that said that sex education around gender identity or gender expression, whatever that means, that the state is not allowed to teach your children about that. It would have mandated that parents give consent before their children learn about LGBTQ issues. It also prohibited schools from teaching about HIV or AIDS without consent. And so Ducey vetoed this bill, Governor Ducey did, and said that the bill was, quote, overly broad and vague and could lead to serious consequences, including a very real possibility that could be misrepresented by schools and in result in standing in the way of important child abuse prevention education in the early grades for at-risk and vulnerable children. But he also signed an executive order that he said imposes strict requirements for sex education. His order requires meetings that held for reviewing sex education standards to be publicly announced at least 2 weeks in advance and opens the public, and it makes any proposed sex education courses accessible for public review at least 60 days, given a district approves it. I agree with that. However, State Senator Nancy Bardo, who sponsored the bill, said, quote, Ducey's order is, quote, no substitute for parental rights grounded in law. She says, quote, the veto undermines every single elected Republican legislature who voted to defend parents and address the frustrations they face with the current sex status quo that provides opt-out for some sexual materials and opt-in for others. While I'm extremely disappointed, my commitment to parents' fundamental rights remains unchanged. I'll continue to work with my colleagues to protect Arizona parents. Huh. So why would the Republican governor of Arizona veto this? Now, one of the attributes of a totalitarian state I'm not saying Arizona is there yet, and I'm not saying Governor Ducey is one of these people. But one of the attributes of a totalitarian state is separating the bond that parents have with their children. It's one of the Ten Commandments for a reason, and it's the only commandment that has a promise within it. Honor your mother and father so you might live prosperous of the land of which you are in. Action, promise. So why would it even be remotely controversial or too broad or vague to say that we do not want children to be educated about gender identity without the parent approving it? So it would mandate that the parents give consent. So what this bill would have done is it actually would have properly involved parents. They would have accused it of being overly involved in this idea of what is actually being taught in our schools. This bill would have made parents more involved in our schools, not less involved, which is a fundamental moral good for any nation. In fact, many parents would have realized quickly that the garbage that their children are learning needs to be challenged. Now, thehill.com misrepresents this, of course. The move comes as GOP-led states increasingly pursue bills that roll back LGBTQ rights, specifically as it pertains to transgender youth. Early this month, Arkansas state legislature voted to override Governor Asa Hutchinson's veto of a bill that bans gender reassignment surgeries and other treatments for transgender youth. Of course you should. Allowing an 8-year-old to get gender reassignment surgery? To allow themselves to chemically castrate themselves? Asa Hutchinson warned that the bill would create, quote, new standards of legislative interference with physicians and parents as they deal with some of the most complex and sensitive matters dealing with young people. Well, Asa Hutchinson and Doug Ducey are wrong. Say this as someone who knows Governor Ducey. At this moment, your voters, there's a reason why every House member and every senator voted for this unanimously, because they're listening to their voters. It's about time the Republican Party starts realizing this. This was my message to the RNC. Your voters are demanding you, through the consent of the governed, the lawmaker, to start to throw down some rules for the road and play a little bit of referee against this moral decline that's happening. This is a very non-controversial bill. If you are going to teach a 10-year-old that men and women is merely an opinion, your parents should be okay with that. And I would tell you right now, 95% of parents in the beautiful state of Arizona would find this to be a mountain of trash, including and especially in the Hispanic community. You want Hispanics to become Republicans, which was a big, lively topic of my RNC speech this morning. It was good. Some people disagreed with it, but we had some fun. A great guy from New Mexico didn't see the way the things I did, but we had a really good discourse and dialogue about it. But if you want to win over Hispanics, then make them realize that their government schools are teaching this gender fluidity, sexual relative nonsense. Just along that reason, that's a reason to sign the bill. But on a moral side of it, the state does not have a right to impart their secular sexual agenda on our children. They don't. That is reserved for the parent. You see, the education of children takes time. And that's why parents, being the guardians, are the best and the only ones that should be making decisions in this regard. This is why I'm such a big fan of homeschooling and such a critic of government schools. Because with government schools, you are going to have a specific agenda imparted in defiance of the values and the worldview of the parents. So State Senator Nancy Bardo is exactly right. Parental rights are critical, and they are being destroyed in our country right now. And if a state like Arizona is serious about re-winning suburban soccer moms, which seems to be the new focus of the Republican Party, I guarantee you that suburban soccer moms in Paradise Valley, in Scottsdale, in Chandler, in Mesa, would be outraged to learn that their children are being taught graphic Planned Parenthood sponsored and supported gender identity and gender fluid ideas. And they would say, not only do I not allow this, I'm going to run for school board against it. Any piece of legislation that involves parents in this process, by default, does a moral good for the nation. You need more parent eyeballs, not less parent eyeballs. There are three things I want to get to in a very short period of time, so I don't think we're going to be able to do it. Okay, first of all, Valerie Jarrett. I want you to listen to this. She tweeted this out. She says, a black teenage girl named Makia Bryant was killed because a police officer immediately decided to shoot her multiple times, quote, in order to break up a knife fight. Demand accountability, fight for justice, hashtag Black Lives Matter. I'm sorry, Valerie Jarrett. Why did he do that? Oh, to break up a knife fight. Got it. She was trying to kill somebody. She wasn't playing Scrabble. She wasn't playing soccer. She wasn't doing her makeup. She was trying to kill somebody with a knife. And again, it wasn't a knife fight. One person had a knife. The person who got shot. She was trying to kill somebody with that knife. That's called a deadly and lethal weapon. So that was just an unarmed person getting attacked by someone with a knife. I love this kind of watering down of a knife fight. Ah, come on, we have knife fights all the time. How dare you police break up our knife fights? Like, what are you, like, medieval? We do the knife fight thing all the time. Yeah, sorry, we're so uncultured that when we try to see a black person get stabbed with a knife, we're like, nah, probably going to intervene. That's basically the new argument. How dare you interrupt our jousting? What? Someone called the police, by the way. I'd like to find out who. So let me get this straight. Breaking up a knife fight in the black community is now white oppression. How dare the police want to protect a black person from literally getting stabbed? But that won't stop them. You see, we're racist because we are so backward thinking, according to the left, because we don't want to watch a knife fight. Suppose a Valerie Jarrett is saying that we should be spectators the next time people take out their blades. The next time people take out these massive swords in the hood, don't call the police. Just watch. And if you dare say anything, you're a racist. Second story I want to get to. Seven House Republicans pledged to deny donations from big tech companies. I want to name some heroes right here. Ken Buck, Chip Roy, Greg Stube, Dan Bishop, Ralph Northam, not that Ralph Northam, Ralph Norman, good guy, Andy Biggs, and Burgess Owens. Seven people that deserve thanks. People say, who do I give money to? Go give money to them, because they have said, we are no longer going to take money from Apple, Facebook, Google, Amazon, and Twitter. It's only going to change when we change the capital flows. It's only going to change when our lawmakers look at getting money from tech companies the same as getting money from Planned Parenthood. It's morally the same. So I want to thank Ken Buck, Chip Roy, Greg Stube, Dan Bishop, Ralph Norman, Andy Biggs, and Burgess Owens. Seven guys. It should be the entire Republican caucus that say, we are not taking tech money any longer. It's the right move. It's the right thing to do. Email us your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com, and check out charliekirk.com for all the latest news and information. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Please consider supporting us at charliekirk.com/support. I hope you're able to hear this podcast. I don't know what Apple's doing, but we're going to figure it out. Email us your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com. God bless you.